World Vision Canada has released a new poll. It shows that Canadians recognize that life here in Canada won't return to normal until the pandemic is stopped everywhere around the world. To talk about this poll, I'm joined by David Coletto. He's the CEO of Abacus Data, and Julie McKinley. She's a team lead at World Vision Canada. Welcome to Radio Canada International.
Thanks for having me.
David, let me start with you. The survey shows a change in the mindset of Canadians as this pandemic progresses. Can you talk about what changed?
Well, I think the first thing that's changed is when we ask Canadians how concerned they are about a number of global issues, things like poverty, climate change. The migration of refugees. What's clear is that this pandemic has put a spotlight on the spread of infectious disease. And so we've seen from January, before the pandemic really took hold in Canada, a 13 percentage points increase in those who say they are extremely concerned or very concerned about this as a global issue. And in total, almost 7 out of 10 Canadians feel that way. So, as each of our lives have been affected by this pandemic here at home, in terms of our work, in terms of our health, in terms of what we can and cannot do. Canadians are also well aware and increasingly concerned about the global connectedness of this issue and how we really aren't an island and what happens around the world can affect us here going forward. So that was the big shift. What we also explored, though, was the sense that, while Canadians have been very engaged in this issue here in Canada, most, in fact, say they have thought about how this pandemic is affecting those living in poorer parts of the world. And I think that is a reflection of the broad understanding and recognition that people have about how difficult this virus makes life for people and especially those living in more vulnerable or highly dense situations around the world.
Julie, let me bring you in here. I'm very curious, why did World Vision decide to do this poll? What was the thinking behind commissioning this poll?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important for us in the humanitarian sector to know what the perspectives are of Canadians. It's important to inform policy here in Canada and the actions of our government. It also informs our advocacy work. We work with communities and families and children in affected countries, but we also have an obligation to also help the Canadian public understand the reality of those situations and the challenges that those children in a lot of the world's most vulnerable places are facing.
Was there any concern on your part that with ballooning deficits, countries like Canada, big donors, Canada, UK, US, Germany, that the public appetite for more spending on foreign aid wouldn't be there?
Oh, always a challenge, even before COVID-19. Globally, the situations that we manage are chronically underfunded for a variety of reasons. And I think the concern is that while COVID-19 is global, we've had the opportunity to create a bit more empathy and understanding in a lot of the donor countries, Canada included. Often we're struggling to inform the public about situations that are happening so far away and are really incomprehensible to a lot of Canadians when we're dealing with protracted situations of violence and conflict. So COVID-19 has given us a good opportunity in the sense that Canadians are experiencing it firsthand and understanding. But we also do need to realize, as been said many times, again, unless we tackle this problem on a global scale, we're going to continue to see the impacts within Canada. So it's important that we, take care of our own in Canada, as all countries are doing, but then also continue to look to what our role is in the global environment as well.
David, I'm curious. So, do you see that attitude, that empathy, Canadians who experience the lockdowns and the inconveniences, thinking about what this would mean in much more challenging settings, like in refugee camps.
Yeah, absolutely. So 70% of Canadians in our survey said that they understood that the impacts of COVID-19 on those living, for example, in refugee or displaced persons camp would be much worse than what we faced here in Canada. At the same time, when we give them a bunch of conditions, right? The fact that people in these camps live far closer together, that there aren't as many health professionals, that the facilities are not very good, that there's nowhere really to distance yourself. Almost everybody to some extent felt that that made life more risky with COVID around us in these places than we would face here in Canada. So there is a deep empathy for that. But to build on what Julie said earlier, I think there's also a recognition that in this context, more than ever, I think Canadians understand that our world is actually quite small and very interconnected. In fact, 88% of Canadians agreed that our world is so interconnected that an outbreak of this virus in another part of the world could come back to Canada at some point. And so even if we are able to, you know, control the spread of the virus here, bring down infections, but if it's not controlled elsewhere, we really can't recover from this. And so I think it put into context for people in a way that other issues sometimes don't, that, you know, if we don't work together as a global community, if Canada doesn't step up and do what it can, because we are a wealthy nation, to help those in areas that don't have the resources or the wealth that we do, that in fact there's some self-interest there. And, you know, for someone who studied public opinion for over a decade and a half, looking at how do you get Canadians, how do you get the public to support more spending on aid, more government intervention on these kinds of things, for some, it's the right thing to do. And we are wealthy, and that there's a moral imperative for us to do this because we have it so much better than so many people around the world. But to increase support to a point where you have pretty broad buy-in, I think you do have to make a connection that, you know, what happens in other parts of the world can come back to Canada. And so it's in our self-interest to not only help those who need help, but do so because if we want to recover from this, if we want to, you know, feel super comfortable that we can travel again or trade can resume, or we can just go back out and live our day-to-day life, that the risk of this virus spreading has to be contained everywhere, not just here in Canada.
And Julie, so then how do you translate that sense of empathy, maybe a bit of the self-interest into concrete action by Canadians and by the Canadian government?
Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different actions that can be taken. Again, the Canadian government is responsive to the Canadian public. So efforts to make sure that opinion that the research has found is there, that the vast majority of Canadians do want to see Canada step up and play our part on the international stage. Oftentimes when I visit crisis and refugee camps, you know, really what people are saying is they want to know the world hasn't forgotten about them, which is really important. So keeping that awareness up, you know, Canadians looking external to know what's happening outside of Canada as the pandemic spreads. We're getting to a point now where we're seeing, you know, reductions in the lockdowns, whereas there's a lots of countries globally that are just getting to their peak. So keeping that awareness in there. And then again, the funding is critical. We've invested so much in international development for decades, the sustainable development goals. We risk losing decades worth of progress and financial investment that's already been made if we can't actually fund a response to prevent the spread and then also deal with the direct as well as the secondary impacts that the coronavirus is having globally.
Julie, can you tell me about what you are hearing from your colleagues on the ground? How has this crisis impacted their work and the work of people who are they taking care of?
Yeah, it's challenging, and it's challenging like nothing we've seen before. World Vision has a history of more than 70 years operating in some of the hardest places in the world. And this is new, even for us. It's new for everyone. Our work involves really direct hands-on engagement with communities, which is challenging right now. You know, the ability to bring a group of people together, whether it be for education and messaging on awareness of the impacts of COVID and how you prevent it, or to do a distribution of food for those that need. Those are all systems that have been used for decades that are now having to be switched, right, with social distancing and not gathering people together. So it's been a steep learning curve, I would say, for all organizations. But the reality is, to some extent, we're used to dealing in that uncertainty and having to switch and to come up with different approaches and ways of doing it. I think the thing that strikes me the most is our staff on the ground are also dealing with it in their families, the same as we are here in Canada, right? Our staff are deciding to leave their homes on a daily basis, potentially exposing their families to greater risk, but to go and to serve and to help and meet those needs of even the less vulnerable within their own communities. So it's challenging, but it's doable. We're making progress. We've reached more than 36 million people in our COVID-19 response globally. So we're still on the ground, we're still making a difference, and we're still able to reach those in need.
David, I'm curious, was there something in this study that really surprised you?
Well, I think it's how open the public is to federal government, for example, engaging more on this issue, spending more, right? I think conventional wisdom might tell you that on a list of priorities, you know, international cooperation, international aid might test at the bottom, right? I always say that no Canadian really will say no to a tax cut, but very few, when given the option, will say yes, spend more on foreign aid. But when you actually frame it around the issues we just have discussed on this conversation, you know, the majority of the country says, no, it makes sense for us to do this. Would I rather us use this money for something domestically? Sure. But they also understand how connected our world is. And so unless we are willing to invest, unless we are willing to spend to solve these problems, to support organizations like World Vision and the work that they're doing, we really can't feel comfortable that this virus is going to go away. So to me, that's the big takeaway, is that a lot of political leaders perceive a lot of risk in engaging on this question, right? That they're afraid of a so-called populist backlash, that a Canada First approach is always going to be the thing that we want. I think for me, and someone again who's looked at the dynamics of public opinion and how we as Canadians react to what our political leaders tell us, is that if leaders want to do this and they lead on it, I do think Canadians will follow and they will understand why it's important to do it. It just requires just a little bit of leadership and not always, you know, falling back on the you know, the lowest common, you know, the lowest denominator in terms of what's going to get somebody to put their back up. Instead, you know, I think as a country, we are over the last 50 years, you can see the shift in our viewpoint, that we are a country that is by nature positioned and postured to be international, right? We trade, we support others, and we've built this self-brand of our soft role in the world. We don't have a big military, and so we are quite proud that we can, where possible, help in other ways, and supporting the poorest, living in refugee camps and displaced persons camp is important. The last point I'll make, though, is all of this requires more education. The other thing we learned in this survey was Canadians severely underestimate the scale of this problem. When we ask them, for example, how many people around the world do you think have been forcibly displaced from their homes? Time and time again, a majority say it's far less than the actual number. And so when you understand the scale of the problem, you are more likely to support action. And so it's incumbent on all of us to continue to educate and remind Canadians. We just had new numbers out, you know, recently from the UN saying that the number of displaced people is actually up, unfortunately. That needs to be communicated so that we have full information when deciding what's the right thing to do.
Julie, I want to end with you. David mentioned yesterday's Global Trends report that shows that nearly 80 million, 79.5 million people were displaced in 2019. Do you think especially in Canada, especially after this very painful loss for the Security Council seat, the political will is there to continue with international engagement and continue pushing this, you know, part of the Canadian identity.
I think it has to be. Again, we're in a situation like none other in the world or in, you know, fairly recent memory. The self-interest and the need to ensure that, again, that the response to this this pandemic as a global issue is a global response, right? There's no possible way that countries in the developing world can manage this on their own. It'll be catastrophic. So I think as a global community, it has to have a response from a global nation. If I think of, you know, some of the challenges and decisions we've made as Canadians as we deal with things, and then I think back to, you know, those 79.5 million that are displaced. This is just one more thing for them. You know, for Canada, this is fairly all encompassing right now. But for someone who's been displaced from their home multiple times, often doesn't have, you know, adequate shelter, doesn't have access to reliable water or soap to wash their hands, this is just one more thing on top of it for them. And I think that's where our role as global citizens and as Canadians really, really comes into play. You know, we're not making those hard decisions. I'm not making a decision as to whether or not I leave my house to go to work or I social distance, because for some of these families not leaving their house, they earn an income daily. So if they don't leave their house that day, they don't earn an income and their children don't eat. And those are impossible challenges and decisions for people to make. And I think we need to do what we can to have an impact on that.
Thank you very much. Julie McKinley with World Vision Canada and David Coletto, the Chief Executive Officer of Advocates Data. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me about this very interesting poll and this very, very interesting issues.
You're very welcome. Thank you.